As a technical person myself, I know if I go to a seminar or a forum or something and I don't hear, by the end of the day, I don't hear anything that specifically helped me in my job and told me what to do, I feel kind of frustrated or ripped off or something. I think, well, gee, that was really great, but what the heck did I take away from that? So I'm going to be addressing some very specific recommended modeling styles in VHDL and things that you can take away with you and use in your work if you're a hardware designer. In addition, I'm going to be talking about some general issues about synthesis from VHDL, and we'll go through those. Here's the overview of what I plan to talk about today. The role of synthesis in VHDL. Ken had talked a little bit about that already. There's a large fraction of people use VHDL for synthesis, specifically for synthesis, as a representation language. And I'll show you why it's important to use synthesis from VHDL. Then I'll talk a little bit, for those of you who are brand new to VHDL, and I would imagine a lot of you are, talk a little bit about the structure of VHDL objects. And it may seem a little bit complex at first. It seemed a little bit complex at first to me, but once you get the basic idea of how all the different objects are interconnected, it's pretty straightforward. Then I'll talk a bit about the design process flow, which doesn't look all that different from some existing design process flows. And then discuss synthesis policy. And by synthesis policy, I mean the issues that come up when you try to ensure that the semantics of the synthesis process, of taking the VHDL semantics as far as synthesis are concerned, are going to be the same as the VHDL semantics as far as the language reference manual is concerned. And there's some issues that come up that are difficult to address, and I'll talk some about those. I'll talk about one specific aspect of that. That could take me a long time to talk about every aspect of it, but I'll talk about one. And then I'll talk about the positioning of vSyn versus Synopsys, which, as was mentioned before, is an external logic synthesis tool. And then we'll discuss integration with external products, because we're moving away from an environment where we have purely internal software tools into an environment where we're acquiring external simulators and external standards such as VHDL and other external tools as well. So first, the role of logic synthesis. Everybody has their own list of what VHDL is supposed to provide. Here's mine, and I would add one or two to the bottom of this now. The structure of VHDL promotes top-down design, structured development, the usual things that you always hear. One of the perhaps subtle advantages is the ability to mix all the different modeling styles within the same language. There's no, for example, in Dexin, there's a separation of VDS format and .NET format, and there the twain shall meet. Whereas in VHDL, you can embed within the same text file some behavioral code and some structural code and so forth. And there are some advantages to that, some major advantages to that. The entire system can be represented within the same representation, can be described within the same representation. Also, one of the advantages that Shahid was mentioning earlier is the ability to define your own types. And going along with the ability to define your own types, the language will enforce type checking for you. So there's an entire class of errors that can be detected at compile time, basically at analysis time. So similar to software, the trend in software development, certainly over the last several years, many years, has been to have more and more errors detected in the compilation step. And it's been demonstrated many times that will lead to faster development. And that's the trend in hardware as well. So we're seeing that more errors are being detected in at the compile step rather than trying to debug it, in the lab or with a simulator even. And finally, another thing is since we have the ability to define new types, it opens up the possibility of representing don't cares within as a separate logic state, or states, and it allows you to describe more completely what the function of your design is. And that has impact both for logic synthesis and obviously for area optimization and so forth. Some other pragmatic things that I would add, or one other pragmatic thing that I would add to the bottom of this, is model availability. When you're moving away from a proprietary language, it's probably impossible, I'm sure it's impossible, to convince Intel to describe an 8386 model in Dexim. It's sort of laughable to think that they might ever even consider such a thing. But it's not at all laughable to think that chip vendors will create models in VHDL. And so that is one attraction that some groups have. If you're using large devices from external vendors, the possibility of getting those large models from them in VHDL form prior to the availability of the chip is realistic. Now, some of these benefits, many of these benefits, such as top-down design and structured development, you'll see why the language itself promotes that in a minute. But some of those advantages are diminished if you're using a bottom-up design methodology. If you take VHDL, which is really designed for top-down design, and use it in a fashion that was and still is popular in many places, which is to basically use it at a gate level and plop down the structural elements and interconnect them, it's sort of the wrong tool for the job. Many of the benefits are diminished if you do it that way. It supports doing it that way, and the examples that Ken put up before for the structural designs, for example, cross-coupled NAND gates, was exactly that. I mean, it's plopping down NAND gates. And that is supported in the language, and you can do it. However, that is certainly not the recommended modeling style to model an entire design with. And some of the advantages of VHDL can't be realized if you continue to design that way. The preferred method is to design a great deal more of the design behaviorally, and many groups do that already, you know, as a first step. There's nothing particularly new involved in this. But to describe a design behaviorally and then to synthesize the structural representation of that. This has a couple of advantages. Obviously, there's an advantage in reducing the amount of time it takes to implement those gates. But secondly, the overhead that comes with VHDL, one of the other criticisms of VHDL that wasn't brought up in the first presentation, is that the generality of being able to define new types comes with a price. And the price is that you can't hard code into the simulator a very efficient algorithm for handling 0, 1, U, and Z. It has to handle, you know, orange, green, yellow as a type, or arbitrary types. Presumably, we're not designing computers that deal with orange, green, yellow. But the point is that you can't optimize the compiler for a specific type. And consequently, there's a performance penalty to pay there. So if you're designing everything at a gate level, you're paying that overhead, and you're not receiving the full benefit of VHDL. Much better is to design at a high level and simulate at a high level, and receive the performance advantages of VHDL, and then synthesize into the low level. Now, I'll just mention parenthetically, though I'm sort of departing from the order of my slides here, that there are fast accelerators available, like the one provided by ICOS, which to a large extent, overcomes the performance limitations of VHDL. From the results that I've heard reported by design groups, ICOS seems to be an excellent way of accelerating VHDL and other languages as well. So I'll just give a little, I don't get any money from ICOS for saying that, but it does seem, there are remedies for some performance problems you've heard from VHDL. In any case, the idea is to design at a high level and then synthesize into a structural representation. And then you can get the benefits of top-down design and so forth. Well, as John mentioned, I'm the project leader of a project called Aladdin, which is an internal logic synthesis tool. And we've learned some lessons from Aladdin over the past few years, which we're carrying into vSyn. Some of the lessons we've learned are that if you're going to synthesize a large design, if a small change is made in that large design, hardware engineers want to see that correspond to a small change in the physical design. They don't want to have a situation where they've synthesized their design and everything is fine and, you know, the release is Friday and somebody realizes that this gate should have some other thing gating into it or something, and you make a small change and suddenly everything is different. People don't want to see that. That scares them. That scares me. So you want to see a small design change have a small impact in the final design. Secondly, the synthesizer has to accept a natural representation of the design in general and flops and latches in particular. And I will talk in terms of describing the specific things that are going to will be useful in your job. I'm going to talk at some length about how to describe a recommended modeling style for describing flops and latches with variants of asynchronous sets and clears and so forth in a little while. Thirdly, the designer has to be able to choose when the synthesizer is active and when it is not. So for example, on clock networks, almost universally, the designer needs to control clock networks very closely, and you don't want generally do not want a synthesis tool to go off and decide how your clocks are partitioned and how they're supposed to be driven and so forth. Generally, there's not enough information provided to a synthesizer to do that anyway. And in general, any specific area of the design that you want to control, you need the ability to do that. So you want to control what the architecture is. Basically, you want to define the architecture and let the synthesizer handle the details. And some of the things that we've learned is that in almost all cases, area optimization is a non-issue, which was surprising. And we, you know, a few years ago, we thought that was the main problem to solve, getting the design small, good Boolean optimization. But the fact is that we typically do better than manual design. And quite a bit better, actually. And it's not really surprising when you think about it, because there's a lot of loading issues to be concerned with, and it's a long, detailed process. And engineers are concerned primarily with delivering their product when they said it was going to be delivered, and if there's a reasonable amount of extra space, all they care about is that it gets through SPIDER cleanly, that it fits in the chip, and that it does the job. Whereas an automatic tool can spend, you know, time to do exhaustive kinds of Boolean optimization and do a good job on area minimization. Area minimization is quite extensively studied at this point and is generally not considered to be a big problem. At least our experience with Aladdin has been, we really don't get much feedback at all saying that they're concerned about how big the design is. However, since our products are generally sold based on price performance, the faster it can be, often the better. Not for all groups. Some groups aren't performance-driven at all. But in some cases, to the extent that there's any issues at all, it's in testability and delay optimization. We do a good job at delay optimization already, but if it could be 20% faster and not cost very much, then that would be a better solution. And so it's always being pushed. It's always, you know, they're always trying to push to the limits of delay optimization. And a bigger issue as far as VHDL goes and synthesis in general goes is testability. And there's some issues that come up around testability and logic synthesis that you need to be concerned about. And I'll talk about that. So that's the role of synthesis. Now I'd like to talk about the structure of VHDL for those of you who are new to VHDL. And some design process flow issues, and I'll go through those. The primary object in VHDL is called an entity. The language reference manual uses the terms entity, architecture, process, subprogram. And as a matter of technical definition, we have to go through those and understand what those are. And there's not that many of them. And basically what you're seeing here is most of VHDL in terms of the types of objects and how they're interconnected. The central object, the main object of description, is called the entity. And the entity comes in two parts, which I've shown here. The box here is to denote the external interface. And in the external interface, you define the inputs and outputs and any BIDIs that happen to be present. And that interface is all that's needed for the rest of the system to be able to compile with. All you need is an interface description. Tell me the inputs and outputs. The other box here is meant to denote the entity body. And that body defines how that entity is implemented. So this is like a DECSIM model, in a sense. It's like a DECSIM model at this point, except that the model outputs equals input section is separated off into a separate piece. And that's what's seen by the rest of the design. Now, unlike DECSIM, and one of the features that promotes this this structured design methodology is the use of potentially multiple architectures. And what all an architecture is just an implementation of that entity. So whereas in DECSIM, you have a model and its implementation is right there in place, in VHDL, you can have multiple implementations. And different instances of that component, if it's considered a component at the next level up in the hierarchy, each instance can refer to which implementation it wants. So there might be a behavioral implementation of it, or there might be a structural implementation or something that's mixed, and those might be multiple architectures. There might be some architecture that's created by a logic synthesis tool. And in VSIN, that's how that will work. Where you'll define, say, for example, a behavioral implementation of this entity, run VSIN, and it will create a structural implementation as a separate architecture. So it's all stored within the same representation. It's all tightly integrated. Now, that's not really possible in a language like DECSIM. It's a different way of thinking about it. That's how it's represented in VHDL. Internal to an architecture, you can implement things with a subprogram. And subprograms consist of either procedures or functions, like in high-level software languages, or components, which are instances of other entities. So there's an entity hierarchy. And similar as there is in DECSIM, you can instantiate a model. This is exactly equivalent to that. You're instantiating another entity, and it may have component instantiations and so forth. So there's a hierarchy of components there, hierarchy of entities there. And a process, which is very much like a subprogram, except it's not a named procedure. It's sort of inline behavior code. And communication and processes may in turn call subprograms. The communication between these blocks happens via signals. And internal to these blocks, there can be communication, of course, also. Within the subprogram or process or component, VHDL considers what goes on here as being a sequential execution. So it's basically a procedure, and it's sort of line by line, as it is in DECSIM BDS. But at the architecture level, all of this stuff is considered to happen in parallel, as it does in a .NET format file in DECSIM. So you can mix sequential and parallel operations sort of within the normal representation of VHDL. Are there any questions about that? Okay. And that's basically it. I've covered you may take a course at some point that goes through a day of all that, but that's in a nutshell the objects that you have to be concerned with in VHDL. What I didn't cover was packages, and then you define constants and so forth in packages. You might have, for example, a min timing package and a max timing package, and they're basically constants that you can use elsewhere. And it's also used to define types and so forth. So the synthesis methodology is similar to the existing methodology, but with a new twist, of course, for synthesis. Partition the design into a hierarchy of function blocks so that different members of a team can operate independently. And as soon as you have that external interface defined for an entity, the rest of the team can work as though that entity is there in terms of compiling the design anyway. Then design the partition function blocks with behavior models, RTL models, or whatever is appropriate, maybe state diagrams, depending on the nature of the partition. Simulated at a high level. And this is where the benefits of VHDL are realized. It's good at representing this structure and simulating at a high level. So that's generally the recommended method of partitioning and simulating the design. Then synthesize the behavior models into structural models. So to the extent that you have processes or subprograms in your source code, those can be translated to a structural representation automatically, taking for loops and generating structural equivalents of those, if-then-elses, selects, and so forth. There's two different levels of synthesis that are worth discriminating. One is the process of taking that procedural representation and converting it into a structural representation. That might be a naive mapping. You know, an if-then-else might correspond to a mux. For example. And certain kinds of code might correspond to a latch or flip-flop. So that first naive mapping is one synthesis step. A second synthesis step performs Boolean optimization and technology mapping into the technology, worries about loading characteristics, AC loading problems, and so forth. So there's, you can discriminate those two, sort of the initial naive from procedural to structural, and secondly, all the optimization and technology mapping could be considered a separate step. It might be done in one tool and it might not. VSIN is going to be addressing the first step, at least initially, is going to be addressing the first step, which is just mapping it into a structural representation. Because there's existing logic synthesis tools that already do the second step. Aladdin and Synopsys and others already do this. And finally, verify the design constraints, delays, and so forth in your design. So this is not really all that different from what's being done now, but the business of synthesizing behavior to structure is a little bit different from what's done in many groups. VSIN provides a means of translating digital designs represented in a subset of VHDL into a structural form, as I just mentioned. Can be used as a front end, will be used as a front end for Aladdin, but could also be used for other internal or interface for other internal or external tools. What this does is it gives digital the hooks into VHDL so that we can have value added. And for example, we might want to do one of the opportunities that I think we have, and I'd like to maybe, if we can generate some discussion about this later on, I think there's going to be a roundtable discussion later on. One of the opportunities here that we have that maybe we didn't have before is the ability to include testability structures into your design. Because everything is represented in one representation and it's all there, we may have the possibility for including test structures, synthesizing test structures into your designs. For example, if there are test registers that need to be synthesized, we might do that. One of the problems in testability is testability has been well studied for many years, and there's a lot of good techniques for testability. But in a hierarchical design, there's no general techniques for synthesizing test structures at one level of the hierarchy and then using them at the next level of the hierarchy. There's like signature analysis and so forth, and that's been well analyzed and the techniques are there. But then how do you use that at the next level? And there's some issues that are unresolved there. But at least with a tool like this, we have all the design source there, and there's possibilities that we can synthesize some test structures into your design and thereby make reduce the amount of time it takes to test the design in the back end. I'd like to generate some discussion maybe about that later on, so if you can be thinking about that. But VSIN basically is targeted at high-level synthesis right now. VSIN operation synthesizes one entity at a time. And it maintains the entity hierarchy. So this allows you, earlier on, some of the lessons we learned was that engineers want control over the architecture of their design, as I think they should. And synthesizing one entity at a time allows you to decide what the partitioning is. It's not going to collapse the entity hierarchy, synthesize everything, and then generate something which is unrecognizable out the back end. It's going to maintain the hierarchy. You can control it. You can decide how much goes into one. It'll collapse the process hierarchy and subprograms. So if you create processes or subprograms in behavior code, that'll all get collapsed in. But you have the ability to control what gets partitioned where. And as a result, it will create a new architecture for that entity. The architectures, again, were those multiple possible implementations of an entity. It'll create a new one that is the synthesized version of it. A second piece of software called a netlister will have to be run afterwards. So now you have this, you have your VHDL represented with the new synthesized pieces in it, and that's stored in a persistent data structure, so that doesn't go away when you exit or whatever. That'll stay there with your design. A netlister will go through and generate a netlist for the entire design. Now that netlister will generate a format which is appropriate for Aladdin or whatever other tools you might be using as a next step. So that's the basic operation that we see. And quickly, I'll go through the data flow diagram. I won't labor this too much. But the basic idea is you take your VHDL source code, you run it through an analyzer, and that creates a representation called VHDL view. And VHDL view is the representation which many tools hang off of. GenRad Simulator hangs off of it. Teradyne Simulator hangs off of it. A lot of tools hang off this common representation. Then run a tool called SynPrep to create an enhanced representation for logic synthesis. VSIN reads that and will will synthesize the design at a high level and put that information back into VHDL view as a new architecture. That's going through this slide much too fast. We could talk about this a lot more, but these are kind of internals of vSIN, so I'm just gonna, I'll keep moving at this point. If you have any questions later about that, please bring them up. So I wanna move on to the next stage, which is synthesis policy. And under synthesis policy, there are a lot of issues that could come up. These three dots down here mean et cetera. I didn't forget what to stick in the last three. There are many issues that come up concerning ensuring that the synthesis the perception of the VHDL source is the same as the simulator's perception. And by using, actually, for a plug for CLSI, because we're using that VHDL view, which many other tools are hung off of, we are at a much higher level of assurance that we're using the same source. We have the same semantic interpretation of the netlist. However, over and above that, there are some issues that come up that are unique to logic synthesis that need to be addressed. And some of those issues are how will flops and latches be represented? So that if you put, you know, if latch enable, then blah, blah, blah. Is this going to be interpreted as a latch by the logic synthesis tool, or what's going to happen here? We need to define how the logic synthesis tool is going to be, how it will interpret flops and latches. And there are some subtle issues concerning when flops and latches get generated. Which data types are going to be supported? Are they all going to be supported? Are there going to be limitations on that and so forth? Don't care. Is it going to be possible to represent them? Will the synthesizer understand them if I do? And so on. Non-synthesizable constructs. There are plenty of non-synthesizable constructs which are used in simulation. For example, to print something to the terminal, to debug print out to the terminal. Surely you don't want to have your hardware print debug information someplace. You know, that's not the intention. There's certain things which are understood to be sort of simulation time only, and other things which are understood to be for generating hardware. Simulation delays are a problematic area for logic synthesis because it's possible to define in VHDL, for example, the LRM defines that if you're assigning a signal multiple times with delays, you know, do this after 10 nanoseconds, do this after 15 nanoseconds, do this after 5 nanoseconds, it will reschedule them and discard some of the assignments. So that's problematic for logic synthesis because it could be after n nanoseconds. And from a static analysis standpoint, there are certain things which are perfectly legal to do according to the LRM which are unresolvable by a logic synthesis tool. So we've documented what those are and what our requirements are. Those all come under synthesis policy issues. Oh, I suppose I should also mention, VHDL is intrinsically asynchronous. There's intrinsically asynchronous behavior, and we have to implement that with a purely synchronous machine. So we need to define that part of VHDL which can be implemented reliably with the same semantics with a purely synchronous machine. So there are a lot of subtle issues that come up that we've addressed. By the way, there's a specification for vSIN which covers these in great detail, or some detail. Anyway, I won't say great detail, but it does cover them. And if you want a copy of that specification and you'd like to review it, I would certainly appreciate it if you would. You can send me mail at ecadsr:finerty, and I'll get you a copy of that spec that you can review. It covers all these issues and more. What I'm going to be talking about today, since the time is limited here, is how to represent flops and latches in VHDL. So I'll just cover one of those issues, perhaps the most important in terms of representation. This is the recommended modeling style for representing a simple D-latch. As follows. You could define a D-latch in one of two ways. You could, of course, instantiate a D-latch component, like from LSI 100K or something. You can instantiate an LD1 cell, which is a D-latch, or you could define it inline essentially as a behavior model using a process. The recommended way of doing that is as follows: say if the latch enable signal, then Q gets expression, end if, and that will be understood by vSIN as a latch. This will also be interpreted by Synopsys as a latch. What I'm going to be presenting to you here in terms of recommended modeling styles, let me take one more step back. And that is, one of the other things that we learned from Aladdin is that we want to have a single VHDL representation used by all the logic synthesis tools, so that you can take this same VHDL representation, synthesize it on tool A, tool B, tool C. Synopsys has more or less put a stake in the ground and said, this is what we're going to do. There's some problems with what they've done. As Ken was saying earlier, they're not really a subset of VHDL. They're partly subset, partly superset. And they've defined, they do stuff in comments with so-called pragmas that are really outside the language definition, and they're on their own there. But what we've tried to do is fix some of those things and stick to a subset which is VHDL to the extent that we can. And within that subset, if you write your code, your VHDL code, in this subset, you should be able to synthesize it both on Synopsys and in vSyn, and presumably in other logic synthesis tools as well. Because when the market leader says this is the way it will be represented, there's a lot of motivation on the part of other companies to conform to that same representation. So what I'm giving you is basically some good clues to how to represent your design in VHDL in a way that will be synthesized on virtually any logic synthesis tool that synthesizes from VHDL. So this is how to represent a latch. A flip-flop, which is, of course, edge-sensitive, you do very similarly. Now, edge expression here has to be one of the following. This is pronounced tick. Signal tick event, which means something happened, an edge just happened on that signal. Signal tick event and signal equals 1, or edge expression has to be signal tick event and signal equals 0. So, for example, to represent a D-flop, you would say, if clock tick event and clock equals 1, then Q gets some expression. And that would then be interpreted as a flip-flop rather than a latch. The thing that discriminates it, of course, is that it's edge-sensitive here, and it understands that if it's edge-sensitive, then it behaves like a flip-flop, and so it'll be synthesized that way. Now, those are the vanilla-flavored flaps and latches. If you have a synchronous clear on there, then you should. We recommend that you model it like this. If edge expression, where that again has to be signal tick event and signal equals some literal constant, then if reset, then Q gets some literal constant, 0 in this case, could be 1 if you want a preset, else Q gets expression. So this intuitively acts like a flop, and it will be interpreted that way. One thing that should be noted is that the Q gets expression has to be the last clause. If you have, for example, preset and clear, you could also represent that. Those all have to come before the final Q equals expression. So the constant assignments have to come first. And that corresponds to the way Synopsys recommends as well. And well, that was with synchronous clear. With asynchronous clear, you put the reset first. And again, the else if here has to be the last expression. So you're saying, again, if reset, then Q gets 0, else if edge expression, then Q gets expression. And that will be interpreted as a D-flop with an asynchronous clear. The previous slide had it with a synchronous clear. Okay. Positioning versus Synopsys. And I'll say sort of where we position product-wise, where it fits into the overall design process, where vSyn fits in. As I said, one of the lessons we learned, there were 4 different Dexim BDS logic synthesis subsets running around the company that were mutually incompatible with one another. You couldn't take a BDS designed A, run it through synthesizer A, and take that same design and run it through synthesizer B, and or C, or D. They were all different. That was obviously a mistake and evolved for organizational reasons. But we don't want to make that same mistake again. So what we want is one representation that's used so that you can take it to virtually any tool. So what we want to do is the synthesis policy has been designed for maximum compatibility with Synopsys subset. to the extent that that's possible. The problem with Synopsys is that they don't have a VHDL, they don't have VHDL semantics all the time. So for example, the LRM defines that the architecture that will be associated with an entity by default is the most recently analyzed architecture. But they don't know which one is most recently analyzed, so they arbitrarily pick the last one. So if you simulate, you might get some results, and depending on which one you analyzed first or which one you analyzed most recently, you might get different results out of Synopsys. So we'll have a more correct interpretation because we're more closely integrated with the synthesis tools. It's comparable to the Synopsys VHDL compiler. It's targeted at higher level synthesis. The intention is to work on higher level synthesis activities. And it will run under both VMS and Alteryx. Other tools, again, such as ICOS and GenRad Simulator and Teradyne Simulator, are hung off of that VHDL view, and as I'll show in my next slide. And so we're going to have the same interpretation as they are. We're going to be able to understand which architecture is the most recently analyzed and so forth. And finally, it gives digital the ability to add value to the VHDL design process. So if we want to add hooks for testability or so forth, or fault grading and so forth, we'll have a vehicle to be able to do that. So the integration, the final point I want to make is integration with external products. And returning to VHDL view, this is how I see everything fitting in. So again, we're moving into an environment where we have a lot more external products as part of the design process. And we need to figure out a way to integrate our internal efforts with external products and allow individual design groups to decide whether or not they want to use tool A, tool B, tool C, and still have a way to integrate that and all make sense. Fortunately for us, there are a lot of tools which already are tightly, a lot of tools which are interesting to our design groups, which are tightly integrated with VHDL view already. So for simulators, the ones that I mentioned earlier and others are already integrated into VHDL view. High-level synthesis can be done off the same representation and put back into VHDL view with vSyn. Timing verifier, I put up here as a thought-provoking thing because I don't know of any timing verifier that works on VHDL, and some issues have to be resolved there. It would be possible to do timing verification precisely the way we do it today by netlisting it out, running it out, and running AutoDilly or Laser or whatever. That's still possible because once you get a structural-level netlist, you run through Spider and generate, you know, something for an existing timing verifier. That could be done. I don't know of any timing verifier that works directly off of VHDL view. I may learn of one later today. I don't know of one right now. In any case, after running it through those, then you can run it through a netlist or to generate the netlist for Aladdin or Synopsys or other tools that might need that. And that's all I have to say. Are there any questions? The question is, does the sensitivity list activate a signal, activate the process when a signal changes? And yes, it does. The latch example has latch enable. I don't believe that should appear in the sensitivity list. It could, actually, but it doesn't have to.
Because, for example, if this is a latch, anytime latch is enabled, if any signal feeding that latch changes, then output must follow the input from that latch. The latch is enabled.
You're right, actually. If that's what you want here, actually, this shouldn't say latch enabled. This should say sensitivity list.
Right.
Anything in the expression, if the latch is transparent, you want anything that changes in that can cause that latch to pass that value through to the sensitivity list. So actually, you're right. That's a typo. Thank you.
I'd like to defer the rest of the questions if I could, so I have a better answer for it. Unless you have rankings, I'm going to come back and wait. I'll have a few minutes.